franchise TV shows.
Like Star Wars and that?
No. What I mean is like The Office Canada or Taskmaster New Zealand.
I think that can I just double check if your mic's on? I told you I'm going to do it every episode.
Yeah, it's going to get real boring for people to listen to. Can you answer the question?
You're recording and your mic's on. Great. I feel like the American Office wants it because the actual format works, right?
Yeah.
The format of the characters in that stage and like, you know, writing what's happening every day, like that format works. And once it deviates from like once the American Office deviated from being the British one and they just became characters onto themselves, it was a great show. US Office, I burned hard on it for so long and I didn't need to be because I just appreciated it for what
no,
it was.
No, but okay. I'm not specifically this isn't a
Taskmaster. I feel
no,
like
No, hang on. Just let me finish what I was going to say. I'm not specifically talking about the one time that lightning struck twice with The Office. I just mean in general. Like I saw an ad on Binge for The Office Canada. There is an Australian version of The Office that is in pre-production or production or is wrapped. I'm not 100% sure. There are literally 14 different versions of Taskmaster around the world, including Australia and New Zealand.
Drag Race.
All the drag races. I mean, Drag Race is probably slightly different, maybe, because it's kind of more of a talent show.
Yeah, but I want Rue there. I don't want...
Well, that's what I mean. It just feels very... I'm starting to get to the point where I dislike the creator of the show for just franchising out their art.
Yeah.
Like, Alex Horn with Taskmaster came up with this show, did it at Edinburgh... did really well, turned it into a TV show. It's, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast. It's one of my favorite TV shows. And then goes full McDonald's with it and just sells it to every single, like, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it does to tarnish the reputation of the original show. It doesn't matter that it takes away from, like, the specialness of what you've created originally. Who cares? Just got to get that money you need because you'll need, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 houses.
So if I were in that position where I created a TV show and someone said, look, if we franchise it to a few countries and you get a percentage of, you know, blah, 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 which means that I can sit back and just get, you know, a couple mil every year, I would 100% do it.
But you don't need a couple mil every year because you're getting that off the original thing that you created anyway.
Yeah, but more money is great.
You're not going to just get a couple of mil. You're going to get tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, why wouldn't you do that? Because then I never have to.
Because you don't need it. And it takes away from the individuality of the thing that you made in the first place.
As someone who doesn't want to work.
If I'd created Taskmaster, I'd never have to work again in my life, ever.
Yeah,
I don't need to sell it out to 114 different countries see shittier versions of it.
Okay, if you sold it out to 114 different countries and got $50 million for it, you would say no.
You don't need that. I'm saying it dilutes the product. Mm-hmm. You don't need that much money.
Oh, and I don't have that much.
As a viewer.
Yeah, but. Right,
what do you mean you don't have that much?
I don't have that.
What do you mean?
I don't have that much. Like, I don't care about my thing that much because with that $50 million they give me, let me finish in Greek. With that $50 million, I can then create. Use that to really create something else.
But you won't,
that I love.
And no one does.
Well, then I'll fucking buy an island, and I'll pay off, you know, bloody
Stephen
debts
Merchant.
For people.
To be fair,
I'll donate it to charity. I'll pay for people's education. I'll fucking be a philanthropist.
But
with the money.
Merchant and Gervais are still earning money off like selling off The Office to different countries who haven't done it yet. I mean,
someone
like,
wants to pay me $50 million to create crap. I will take it to help the world with that money.
But they're not, and they don't. All that happens is that one or two people get richer. The rest of us get the same shitty TV show, just in a different accent, and we don't get anything new.
I don't think that at all. I think that like, I, as much as I kind of go boo Ricky Gervais, he donates a lot of his money and time to like animal stuff. Also, Stephen Merchant does a lot of stuff.
Well,
but you don't hear about it because he's not that kind of person.
Well, you heard it here first. Kelly Festuca agrees with every single thing Ricky Gervais said. This is, should we just watch it real quick, the only podcast where one of the co-hosts 100% agrees with everything Ricky Gervais says. My name is Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 112 years of bigotry school to be called Ricky Gervais. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian Gelden. It's the woman that will rip your fucking arms off if you say anything bad about Ricky Gervais. It is Kelly Big Wolf. Want to fight about it? Festuca.
Yeah, that's me, you dickhead.
You loved Ricky's last special, didn't you? You were like, the joke's really well written. He obviously worked really hard on this.
No. No, I did not.
It's very obvious he's been out touring this in the clubs, you know.
No, I don't like him. I think that he is not good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What's been happening this week, mate? What's been happening? What's been happening?
I don't know. I've been watching the you know, because I have it playing in the background a lot, and that's really fun. Just the
Seems to be the American equivalent of like The Bill, where like everybody is on, has been on it.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It's like people coming up move through it to go and do other things, like George Clooney, or people sort of take a slight step to the side. Like, what's her name from Freaks and Geeks that I just saw on
episode? We're at the, like, season 12, and Lindsay from Freaks and Geeks, who in ER, her name is Samantha Taggart, who also plays a housewife in Mad Men. What's her name? Linda Calamara. She played Velma.
Linda Calafragilistic Espialidocious.
Yeah.
Is it like Fiorentini or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, something like that. Oh, nah. Linda, yeah. Calago, whatever it is. Anyway, so she plays Sam Taggart. She plays Sam Taggart. And I'm just looking at it now. One sec. And I just hate her. Like the character, it's like she's like a single mom. You know, it's like that character that's like Cardellini. Linda Cardellini.
Cardellini.
And she's just such a pain. Hey, like, she's like,
Cardellini.
You don't understand. She's one of those, like, she's always angry, has a scowl on her face, which is so shit because she's so beautiful and gorgeous. I've been up since
5 a.m. in the morning dropping my 7 kids off to childcare. And
he's got diabetes. My son has diabetes. And everyone's like, I don't give a fuck.
Oh, well, maybe you should knock the fucking Cocoa Pops out of his hands.
And then she played, she played Mrs. Rosen in Mad Men, and that was a great
Here's
character.
To you, Mrs. Rosen in Mad Men.
And Mad Men is just so good. I feel like I want to rewatch Mad Men.
You know what I love about Mad Men?
What?
The theme song, the one that goes, Mad Men, Mad Men, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they advertise for you? Mad Men, Mad Men. You like that song?
I think it's really good. I think that's really good. I think it's really good.
And I've noticed that your way of dealing with me, this has basically been kind of since the wedding. I call it the don't argue. Don't argue in footy is where a player will put their palm in the chest of another player to get them away from them so they can like get a kick or a handball off. Mm. And Kelly does that verbally to me. So I'll make a joke and then Kelly will go, yeah, that's really clever and funny. And then the don't argue is complete. She goes in the opposite direction and goes on with her day.
Because
it's very sneaky. It's very good.
It's really hard turn off when you're in your little world of crazy. It's
meant to be a comedy podcast, but I'm just trying to give the people what they want.
Is it comedy though?
I mean, it's a strong word.
You heard me. Yeah. That was the funniest. It's actually really good. They have a lot of character actors in our ER.
Oh, we're talking about again.
It's really good. I've been watching that and I started watching, there's a few new docos on Netflix. There's a new Menendez Brothers. So there's a Menendez Brothers documentary and now they've like done like a series where they've of it. But when you watch the documentary series of the Menendez Brothers, I think I've spoken about it before on the podcast, There was some pretty significant abuse happening in that family, and it just seems a bit, I don't know, like.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah, so I'm curious to watch the, it's got Chloe Sevigny or whatever, and then it's the mum.
Well, you heard it here first as well, gang. Kelly is a big fan of the Menendez brothers. Ricky Gervais and the Menendez brothers. She agrees with everything that they did and said.
Stop it. What about you, dickhead? What have you been fucking watching?
I've been sick this week. And it's managed to slow me down somewhat. So I've actually had to sit down and watch some stuff. And I've been watching the last season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which was a spin-off from Arrow. So DC had like 2 years where their TV shows were like a success. And in that 2 years, they spun off like 5-6 different shows. And they're all on the CW, which is like a teenage, like it's a TV station directed to teenagers, right? For the most part. True Blood's on there and stuff like that, you know? Anyway, these DC superhero shows went on for like 7 or 8 years each. The Flash is finishing up this year. And Legends of Tomorrow was this weird, for some reason, Katie Loz, who played the White Canary in Arrow, they saw her as a star and they wanted to spin her off into her own show. So they did, but the show didn't, initially it was kind of like, they got this very weird D-grade character called Rip Hunter. They decided they were going to make a show around the White Canary, Rip Hunter. Rip Hunter was played by the redhead dude from the David Tennant Doctor Who seasons. Oh, no, Matt Smith. Matt Smith.
Yeah.
So he came on, he did one season and left. So then they just sort of had this rotational roster of like D-grade superheroes join the Legends. But it very much became like its own weird sci-fi show. It was kind of like an American version of Doctor Who, but kind of.
I'm kind of up for that, man. I like that kind of weird Doctor
It was
Who-ish
that sort
stuff.
Of thing that, like, I would say Marvel and Star Wars, those big franchises, are in desperate need of like, hey, let's just let something become its own thing. This was kind of a brand new idea. They'd sort of skirted around it in comics, but for the. For the most part, it wasn't really a thing. And it was a kind of a cool thing because you could have actors come and go and it didn't really make a huge difference. But anyway, so I've just been sort of burning through the seventh season. But the seventh season happened after the Warner Brothers, HBO, Time Warner or merger, all that shit happened, and then you know, like you guys might have heard about the Batman, the Batwoman. I can't speak.
Batman movie,
the Batgirl movie that was shelved as a tax write-off and stuff.
I don't understand why this they won't just release
this. This new real life Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock took over Warner Brother, Time Warner, and was like came from like genuinely, it's the exact same story as Jack Donaghy. Came from like their electronics division or something. And took
GM
over the
motors,
TV.
Genuinely.
It's like you can't satirize anything anymore because it's fucking, it will happen 2 years
and
later.
And he did it and he just shelved it.
So basically this guy who's come along and like completely gutted fucking HBO, turned it into HBO Max. So now we don't get any decent TV shows out of HBO anymore. Completely gutted the Warner Brothers thing, has basically gotten rid of all DC stuff, which a lot of people would argue good. The films were terrible. But that's why you got a weird ending at the ending of Flash where there were like four different Batmans and stuff and none of it really made any sense because that timeline had been discontinued but they still put that film out but had to redo the ending because Jack Donaghy over at Time Warner was like, nah, we're going to get this guy, Guardians of the Galaxy, to come over and do our new DC content because we can definitely make money out of that. But then at the same time, there were these TV shows that, look, I'm not saying they're high art. They are not. They are terrible soapies that I love because people in costumes that I read about when I was a kid jump around and makes me feel safe. But they were being watched. You know, they were making money. And he just came in and got rid of all of them. But
to
for some
money,
reason,
or
supposedly. But anyway, he because of backlash, allowed Legends of Tomorrow and The Flash to have one final season. But it is so apparent that they have given these poor guys no money. No money. So the last season of this TV show, which for six seasons was set in different timeline, like set in different parts of the past or in on different planets, like, you know, they're traveling through time and space. This last season they've had to write it where they've gotten stuck in Texas in 1925. Because it's very obvious that they've got like an old-timey set at Warner Brothers that they can do for cheap. And so it's actually kind of interesting because the writers are having to like write around the limitations of the budget of the last show, of the last season. But it's actually kind of, and they're doing okay work with it, but it's actually really sad to see as well because it's, there's obviously just no money in this show whatsoever.
I just love how it's like you just got to use what you've got, like that. You know, like we've got the set, so let's do it. And it just makes me think of the Jack Donaghy shows, like MILF Island.
Yeah. Well, that's what this real-life Jack Donaghy will turn HBO Max into, you know what I mean? Like it'll just end up being like what is the cheapest shit? And this comes back to my original point in our cold open that I'll put in inverted commas about franchise TV shows. Like I think we're just getting to the point where this is what we'll end up with. Like I think us as viewers probably have a responsibility to not watch this stuff.
Because
the more we watch it, the more they'll make it, right?
Just for fun's sake, 30 Rock. So this Gals on the Town is one of the shows. Like 30 Rock was really good about making fake shows. So this is what we can anticipate to see from the new Warner Brothers guy. Gals on the Town. We're Gals on the Town. Good God Cop. Remember God Cop? And Donaghy put himself in it.
You know what?
Let us pray. To who?
You know what it'll end up being like? It'll be exactly like Kroll's show.
Yeah.
Just all these terrible, terrible.
Homonym. Homonym. Is it scene or scene? The one you do with your eyes? Nope, it's the other one. Come on. Remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Homonon.
Remember?
Los Emetos Calestinos, which is the Spanish that there's a Jack Donaghy clone that's in a Spanish soap opera. Gold Case. He did Gold Case like what's it? No Deal? Deal or No Deal?
Deal or No Deal.
But it was Gold Case and it was like which one has the gold in it, but you could tell because the women couldn't hold it because it was too heavy. Deal Breakers. Oh, that was Liz's show. Bitch Hunter with Will Ferrell. Queen of Jordan. Oh, remember the wife of Tracy Jordan?
Yeah.
And her slogan was it something, I've got IBS? It's my ham. It's my day to pay. Oh, Americans, kids got singing. And kids with a Z, dude, and MILF Island. Man, yeah. So good.
So that's what we can expect to see.
Memory lane.
It's interesting, though, because, like, in the film world, it feels like people are more moving towards watching more sort of adult films. I don't mean adult in the sense of like, bow, bow, I mean like
bow, 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 bow.
More grown-up themes, you know?
Yeah.
Like
I mean,
Deadpool was the most successful movie of all time. I understand that. It's not like people aren't going to see superhero films, but there is definitely, I think, with the younger generations coming through and having the availability of every film ever made, ever, there is this larger class of film fans who want to actually watch movies, which is really cool. But TV, I don't know, man. TV just feels like, I don't know, even stuff like House of Dragon, which, I don't know, maybe at some point I'll go and watch it because I did love Game of Thrones, but I just have no interest in it at all because it feels like just recycled rubbish.
Yeah, because people don't want to take chances. People go, well, Game of Thrones works, so let's just do a whole bunch of stuff like Game of Thrones.
But I'd rather watch a procedural. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, obviously there are I'd rather just watch a cop show. I'd rather watch a really well-made cop show.
Yeah.
That has like a slightly different bent about it than...
Well, I mean, you look at, that stuff that works. Here's but then really... that's why shows like Beef did really well, because it was someone took what?
No, I'm remembering that show.
It was like really critically acclaimed, and I liked it. I thought it was very, very good, because it was something I'd never seen before, and I actually was like, and maybe that's why it was so critically acclaimed, because I've just never seen a show like this before, where two people had a road rage incident, and the whole season is about them trying to fuck with each other, but like in a realistic way, you know, where social media catches up with you and that kind of stuff. I thought it was really good, you know. For stuff like that. That's interesting.
Here's an example of what I'm talking about. 2-3 years ago, I think it was like in the middle of the pandemic or just after the pandemic, they rebooted Perry Mason, the old lawyer show from the 50s, 60s, which was one of the most popular shows in TV at the time, reran for 30 fucking years. I remember my mum watching Perry Mason in the middle of the afternoon when I had sick days.
I remember Perry Mason.
They reboot it. And the backstory is that he was essentially a PI, a private investigator, before he was a lawyer or a detective. I can't remember. Which would be fine. Like, it would be fine to make a private investigator show set in the Depression, right? That actually sounds kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, well, what's
but because your gripe? Because they had to slap Perry Mason on it to get people to watch it, which I don't understand who the fuck they think 30 and 40-year-olds in the year 2020 are going to be like, oh, Perry Mason, I'll have to check that out. They had to abide to all this law.
But the story
was so convoluted because they had to keep seaming it into the old TV show.
What about like something like Ray Donovan? That's something that was... brand new created. And
no,
it's
it wasn't. It was a film first.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Listen, just be happy. Let's just talk about Beetlejuice. Well, this is too complex for my brain.
This comes to my point, right?
All right. Okay.
I'm getting a little bit sick and tired of watching rehashed shit for the sake of it. So somebody who is already has more money they could ever possibly spend can earn more money. And that's how I felt walking out of Beetlejuice. I'm going to put this on the record really early. Like, I know our roles is like, Kelly's the happy optimist and I hate everything. I didn't hate this movie. I had a good time watching it. We went and watched it with some friends. Seals, Dara, Nick. It was a really good afternoon. We had a good night. It was a fun day, you know? And it was nice to go to the movies. But all up, when I was thinking about this film during the week, I was like, this has tainted my I feel like this has tainted the legacy of Beetlejuice somewhat. Because it was such an interesting and original and out there film initially that literally makes no sense. It's just come totally from the brain of one person. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And then this time around, it was like they're hitting the same beats, bub. Like, it's the same jokes, like Beetlejuice doing the scary face, Beetlejuice doing a dance to something, making everybody dance.
But I love that character.
Just watch the original film then.
But it's something different.
But it wasn't.
But it was.
It wasn't really. I mean, we had half a film about a kid and like her getting to know her mum and stuff.
But I like revisiting it.
Who cares?
Well, then never watch a movie ever again. Like, what do you want me to say? You know what I mean? Like, just enjoy something for what it is.
But I didn't enjoy it. I watched it for what it was.
But
and
I heard
what
you
it was.
Laughing.
Yeah, but what it was a copy of the original film.
Yeah, because people love nostalgia these days and everything's coming back.
Yeah, but that's a commercial decision, not an artistic one.
Of course it is, because it's a commercial industry.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to. So everything we watch from now on is just a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy.
Damien, you can have both. There's artistic things in the industry, and there's commercial things. This is a commercial thing. You'll never get when the first one wasn't made for artistic, it was made for commercial.
No, it was not. It's complete. It was completely original. It's a completely original, you know, horror comedy film that no one had seen anything like it beforehand. No, I haven't really seen anything like it since until I watched Beetlejuice, and then I was like, ah, this is
okay. So the crux of your argument is that you just don't like remakes,
unless they're done interestingly.
But they're not.
But this is the same person essentially remaking the original film 35 years later to just, you know, top up the superannuation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty negative way to look at it. Can't you just look at something and just see, take it for what it is and just have a bit of joy from it?
I am taking it for what it is.
Can't you just have a bit of joy from it? No.
Well, we're meant to be fucking critiquing. It's a film podcast.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
So I'm meant to just sit here every week and go, I love this shit that was served to me on a plate.
No,
I love
but
it.
That's what. But I mean, like, your opinion's fine, but my opinion back to you is like, can't you just sit back and enjoy? Can't you just take it for what it is? It's a silly, silly movie. It knew what it was.
Reviewing
this movie knew what it was.
I'm reviewing it in its own little basket, which is against the original film. And when you stack it up against the original film, it falls way short.
But what about The American Office? You stack it up against the UK Office,
that's
it falls short.
One example.
But if you put it on its own.
That's one example where lightning has managed to strike twice. It doesn't happen very often. But it's every single thing we watch at the moment is a remake or a sequel or a television show of a film or like. I don't see anything like the original Beetlejuice. It just doesn't happen.
Not even the new Sex
and the
City?
Not coming out of Hollywood.
Oh, I guess
that's it's the same. I mean, that's a sequel, essentially, to the original Sex and the City. Yeah. But let me – you love Sex and the City. Did you love that reboot as much as the original?
I love to see where everyone's up to.
Right.
There is a fan fiction in me that I just – like, I want to know – what happens, like what happened to him. Like, and I would love a fan fiction on Mad Men and The Sopranos because I want to know what happens to them.
You had it with The Sopranos, with the film Saints of Newark or whatever, and it was canned.
But that
everyone
was a prequel.
Hated it.
I haven't seen that yet, and that was a prequel. That wasn't that was like Tony as a kid.
Yeah, I get that. But that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, but I don't want to know what happens before. I want to know where they are now, like the Friends characters, you know. Mm. I want to know where they are now. And that's the thing, like Frasier did it and it was shit. A lot of people did it where it wasn't that good.
Frasier was what we're talking about from Cheers.
Mm.
It was a spin-off from Cheers. It was 10 years later, was, you know, and it worked.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't work every single time. I'm not saying there weren't moments where I didn't enjoy Beetlejuice. I love Beetlejuice so much that, like, watching this film, it was like, ah, it's great to see Michael Keaton. It's great to see Catherine O'Hara. But outside of that, there was a good chunks of this film where I'm like, everything to do with the daughter.
Yeah.
I was bored.
Yeah. You know? I find her really boring. I know that. People love that Jenny Ortega chick from Wednesday, and she's in everything because she's so, you know, she's 5 foot nothing and is skinny and beautiful.
She's the new Christina Ricci. It's not anything about her performance.
I mean, I don't like her. I don't know. I just there's nothing that chick has been in that I've actually gone, huh? I like it. And also, Winona Ryder can't act, and I don't think she's ever really been able to act. No. Like, she could do Reality Bites. But
she's all right in Stranger Things. That's probably the strongest I've seen her in Stranger Things.
I found that she struggled to act here, but there's a lot of elements with this film that I really liked, and I wish they did more of it. And I feel like they had so much to kind of to say or do, because the whole film starts off with the chick in the box. Basically, there's obviously a really evil chick who just like gets cut up in a million pieces, and she's in a box, and it's the Monica Bellucci chick. And then, you know, an accident happens and all of a sudden her body comes together again. She staples herself together and it's playing the Bee Gees tragedy. Mm-hmm. And it's so like, and this is at the very beginning. You've got Danny DeVito as a cleaner in the afterlife and this tragedy song plays and this body comes together. And that scene there to me was 100% authentic Beetlejuice nuance and like everything about
it's
that.
It's weird and creepy and funny and it's well acted.
That is the way the film started. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to be good. Because that was, it set the tone. And then it was not great because the whole thing with the daughter, you know, was just like, blah, 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 blah. And then an hour later, Michael Keaton comes in as Beetlejuice and you're like, here we go.
Well,
here's the tone again.
Can I just say something? That's one of my gripes that you like an hour later, Michael Keaton comes in.
Well, apparently they reckon that in the – but this is the thing. In the original Beetlejuice, it took an hour for him to come in.
Yeah, but it's not – so what, you're just remaking the original film. Everyone is there to see Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice.
They should have got to him earlier.
No one gives a fuck. Give the people what they want.
They should have got – I mean, they're kind of glimpses of him, but I feel like this film did a disservice because the afterlife stuff is what people love.
And also, like, is he good? Is he the protagonist in the film? Is he the antagonist in the film? He's kind of both, but not really. I felt like the roles were a lot more confused in this film than in the original film. Yeah.
Justin Trudeau's character was great. He plays, like, the slimy boyfriend of Lydia Dietz. And the actual character always... Always, Jimmy always grabs a toy when we're recording that makes a sound. It's so funny. He hasn't touched that tortoise in forever. Anyway, so she, Lydia Dietz's character, her, this is what I like. This is the one thing I like about when we revisit old stuff. I get to see what she's doing now. And what is she doing? She is hosting a TV show like Ghost Hunters where she... Which I fucking love. So it's obvious that she still sees ghosts. And they have a thing where she very like she's in a bathroom stall and there's a chick talking to her and it's like, oh, it's a ghost talking to her. That element, like I so want to see more of that. I want to see more of Lydia Dietz being visited by other ghosts going, hey, how's it going? You know, and then we find out that her daughter has the same kind of, you know, sixth sense. And I just, oh, man, I want to see more of that. I want to see more of Beetlejuice. I want to see more of the afterlife. But because I had to set up the story about the daughter and then the daughter meeting a boy, blah, 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 like they had to set up so much of that stuff. I didn't get to see enough afterlife. They did not do enough with the Monica Bellucci character. They did not. She was such a good character. Granted, this film was 104 minutes, so tick. It actually went for the amount of time a film should go for, because if they had have included all more of the other stuff, it would have gone for 2 hours, which is unnecessary. But there was other stuff they could have cut out. Like they did a whole dance sequence to that song Cake Out in the Rain. And that could have been cut off. Like that went for way too long and I didn't need, you know, I would have preferred more of the Monica character. Also, what's interesting is that, what's his name? Tim Burton. So Tim Burton always loves putting Helena Bonham Carter in stuff because he always puts the chick that he's fucking in the films. So that should have been Helena in that role. But now since he's since he's banging Monica, she's that role.
Mm-hmm.
But
she's only in the film at the beginning of the film and then at the end of the film. Like she's meant to be the antagonist, but we barely see
her. The whole promotion is about her. The whole thing. Whenever I see promotions, it's about, oh, his wife's back, his ex-wife's back. And it's about that joke from the first one where he pulls out the wedding ring.
Yeah.
And it's got the finger in it. He goes, I swear she didn't mean nothing to me. Nothing. It's like it's all from that. And I'm like, why was she not in it more? Like, she's like, oh, I hate Beetlejuice. I want to get Beetlejuice. So, like, there should have been a massive showdown between these two ghouls with their respective ghost powers, right?
Beetlejuice should have had to have, like, the film should have made Beetlejuice the reluctant protagonist that has to protect Winona Ryder and her daughter from Monica Bellucci. Or Bellucci, or whatever her name is, which they kind of sort of like skirt around that, but it doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
There are scenes in this film that are really fun and interesting and funny where Michael Keaton is doing Beetlejuice stuff. Mm. But then to me, everything else that's going on in this film kind of bored me. Mm. And like you say, it's only, what was it, an hour and 10 minutes or like 4 minutes? Yeah. No, 100 and. No, it wasn't an hour and 4 minutes. 104 minutes,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's almost, I mean, 16 minutes off 2 hours. So it's an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It felt longer than that. He definitely could have cut 15 to 20 minutes out of this film and made it an hour and a half.
Mm.
But, yeah, everything to do with the daughter bored me. The idea of like who Beetlejuice was in this story seemed confused.
You know what it was? The guy who wrote it wrote Wednesday, so they used it as an avenue to push with Wednesday. That's what it was. You know what I mean? Like it was this weird avenue to push her. Like, wouldn't it be funny if we had a new Lydia Dietz and a daughter, and she's dark and all this stuff? I think they could have done Beetlejuice where it was just like,
there was something there between the daughter and the mum, and the daughter not understanding the mum's trauma and stuff like that. Like, there's something there. There's something there that's interesting, and I thought there were some scenes between the two of them that they actually acted that out really well, where she was like, you know, the daughter was like really like arsehole-ish to her mum and like being that teenager, and then the knowingness between Catherine O'Hara and Winona Ryder of like being both now being mums and knowing, like, there are a couple of moments where Wednesday Adams is being a complete bitch and they both look at each other, or Winona Ryder says something like, oh God, it's like I don't even exist or something, and then Catherine O'Hara laughs like, because Winona Ryder did the exact same thing to her. There was something there to have that, like, three generations of women, like, prevailing through trauma together. I know that sounds like a highfalutin concept for a comedy, but it doesn't need to be, like, completely at the forefront of the film. Just have it in the background, you know? And maybe they didn't want to rely on a male protagonist. They wanted to have the female protagonist win out in the end. But what's Beetlejuice doing there? If that's the case, have it so that Winona Ryder and her daughter together with her mum finally beat Beetlejuice, and don't even have Monica Bellucci in the film at all. Have them team up together so they're a double threat. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I feel like we didn't need the daughter. We could have just done it with Charles is dead. The dad is dead. And then so, you know, Lydia and the stepmom, like Catherine O'Hare, they come back. And then to something with the father, like maybe something about the house or the will or money, and then they need Beetlejuice's help, and then the ex-wife is still there. I feel like there could still have been a story between the two people alive, Beetlejuice and the ex-wife, and not the daughter, and we still could have known, like, all the, you know, Justin Theroux's character being slimy, what Lydia Dietz can still see dead people. I think that we could have really done so much more with just that. But I feel like because they just were so desperate to piggyback on the success of that actress, Jenna Ortega, that they pigeonholed.
Yeah.
What if, hey, listen, guys, what if Lydia Dietz had a daughter and it's just like Wednesday? Bum, bum, bum. That was the meeting. $100 million. Yeah, thank you, Motherfucking Rabbits.
But also, like, there's all these like convoluted 2024 screenwriting potholes that are in this script of like, you know, her dad's dead and she's got to come to terms with her relationship with her mom.
Don't care. Like, And yeah, he was an activist. Boo, don't care.
Yeah, of course he was. You know, like,
I don't care.
Just
honestly,
all of that stuff of like, oh, he will guide them through the underworld.
Lydia
and
Deeds,
then that's at the point where Beetlejuice becomes the bad guy again, but initially is kind of the good
guy.
It's like he was helping them, but only because there was a contract, but then the contract doesn't exist, so then he's now the bad guy. But where's Monica Bellucci? Ah, well, she's still around, but she only cares about Beetlejuice. It's like, and then, I'm sorry, bub, that scene in the church where they basically do the Deo scene again, but this time it's with, like, a weird disco fucking song.
Some women caught out of the rain.
Goes on
it's
for
too
so
long.
Long.
It's so, they're trying to do Deo again, but this it goes for, like, 6 minutes and it is unnecessary.
And this is the crux of my argument and disappointment with the film. That, like, even in our critique of this, we're talking about, oh, they're trying to do Deo again. They're trying to do this again. They're trying to do this again. Do something different, right? Write something completely different in that world. Don't write this exact same fucking story. This is the same shit that happened with the fucking first new Star Wars film, whatever the fuck it was called, Rise of the Jedi or fucking Poe Loves Anakin or whatever the fuck it was called. I can't remember. But the first new Star Wars film is almost beat for beat A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, just with little twinges of it. Like, it genuinely feels like people are grabbing the scripts from old films, putting it in fucking OpenAI and say, write a sequel for this. You know, and it's fucking weird and all over the place and doesn't fit a structure. There's no three-act structure. Like, there are some rules you have to adhere to when you're writing shit, you know? Like, I know I bang on about this shit all the time and maybe I come across as a very basic writer with this stuff, but you need an antagonist, you need a protagonist, and you need to stick to who those people are
and Michael
throughout
Keaton's
the
good.
Whole film.
Look,
Keaton's
let's
amazing.
Wrap up.
O'Hara's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, she's great.
Right?
She's great.
I didn't hate Winona Ryder as much as you did in this film. I thought she was fine.
I just thought
fine.
She struggled to act and her all of
I
her
I thought
acting-
Justin Theroux was good in the film.
Oh, Justin
like,
Theroux
got,
was amazing. Catherine
you've got
was
a
great.
Good cast. The screenplay and script are confused.
The story was shit. The scream, I actually think the actual script itself, as in like the dialogue and the exchanges, is
but you
really
know
good.
A lot of that would have been, but you know a lot of that would have been improvised with the people who are in that.
I don't know. But the story,
absolutely.
The story was shit. I did not
you think
like
Michael
the story.
Keaton's coming in. Like, I guarantee on the page that script was worse than it is on film. I guarantee people like Keaton and O'Hara have come to set
yeah,
and
maybe.
Gone, nah, let me
O'Hara,
punch this up a little bit.
Even O'Hara was not given a lot to work with.
But again, because she was such a, like, I mean, I know we all love her, but she's not a major character in that first film.
No, she right? stole she's the film because she's incredible.
Yeah, but she was in the film for 2 minutes. So now they're trying to cram her back into this film because everyone loves Catherine O'Hara.
But I do like that she's like, an artist in like
– No,
like,
that's all great.
That's
all
pretty
great,
funny.
But she doesn't need
she's
to be
hilarious.
In the film because now like – and they even try and like justify in the script of like, oh, well, you guys get along now because of blah, 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 blah. Because in the first film, they fucking hated each other, you know. But in this film, it's like, oh, no, we get along because we want to have Catherine O'Hara as much screen time as possible. Like, all the decisions about the film are being made commercially, not artistically.
Of course.
You know?
Well, it made $200 million, so great job. How many grumps?
2.5.
I mean, I feel like I want to give it 3, but... Because I hate that the daughter, I hate that actress. I just don't think she's great. And anything she's in, I'm like, ugh. I might have to do 2.5 too.
So after all that, we're giving it the same score.
I mean, it's like Justin, there's a few really shining lights in it, but there's too many bad, annoying things that were just unnecessary. Anyway, 2.5 grumps. All right. Beetlejuice. All right, there you go. All right, let's wrap up. I'm going to go to the toilet and stuff.
We could be saying anything to you right now and you're not listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening.
Tell people, share.
Hey, we need you to do one thing. We need you to tell other people about this podcast. We actually got some really nice feedback. Justin, I think it was during the week, reached out to me. Thank you. That was really nice, kind words about the podcast.
Oh, that's sweet.
But yeah, Tell your friends, gang.
Okay. Well, we love you very much.
Kelly's got to pee. We got to go.
Bye. All right, buddy.